Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us this afternoon or this evening or tomorrow morning if you're on the other side of the dateline. We're very glad that you took the time. We're always very grateful, and we got a pretty darn good show for you. Second hour, Jimmy will be here and we'll do open forum. And this hour, we have made a special room. We're not going to do open forum this hour because we got a superstar of the Catholic publishing world and also just a really good person. Noel Maring is the author of Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology, among other things. Noel Maring, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I say you're a superstar because you've crossed over from just doing Catholic media to I see you in the secular media now since you've done this Awake, Not Woke book.
Yeah, that's a new thing, new territory.
Yeah, but what I really like about it when I see you there is you still talk like a Catholic. Like you talk about God and you talk about, you know, all the stuff that we would talk about here. You don't change it for the secular media.
Yeah, I'm trying not to accommodate myself too much to something I'm not.
I think that's good. We've had the great pleasure of having you as our guest here at Catholic Answers today because you're in town doing a bunch of talks. And we did a talk about Awake, Not Woke a little earlier, which we'll put out on our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus, within the next week or so. But I want to talk to you about the other thing you do with Carrie Gress, Theology of Home.
Yep.
Tell us about that, Theology of Home.
Yeah, Theology of Home has been a long time coming, or we've been working on it for quite a while. So we started with the first book. Carrie came up with the phrase Theology of Home actually on her treadmill, and she was just kind of thinking about
that's funny.
Yeah, that she gets all her best ideas on the treadmill. But she was just contemplating, or she was listening to a song about a homecoming and just thinking about how evocative a homecoming is and how we watch, you know, videos of soldiers reuniting with their families at home, and we invest so much in our homes and erect billion-dollar industries based on home remodeling and television networks, and how much import we give to the home, and how somehow, though there's a kind of a disconnect between all of that energy and importance and effort and, you know, sort of the meaning of home, and in some ways we're grasping for that meaning. But we've so severed ourselves from it that I think we were trying to figure out, well, what is it that we're longing for when we're longing for a beautiful home and a happy home? What is that longing actually pointing us towards? And so that was kind of the nexus of the idea for the first book. And then the second one was just came naturally after the first. We just had thought about, you know, what is the role of the homemaker and how can we kind of reimagine that and revitalize that word? Because it almost sounds like a pejorative at this point. Like if you call a homemaker, you feel like embarrassed or apologetic
about it. Yeah, yeah.
And so we really kind of wanted to think about it more broadly in some ways, you know, that giving the dignity to the woman who is a stay-at-home mom and a homemaker, but also reminding ourselves that everyone who lives in a home, you know, cares or ought to care to some level about making that home a peaceful and happy place and a welcoming place. And men, women, single people, you know, at any age or stage tend to care about their homes. And why is that even? You know, why is it important to be a homemaker? And so we're trying to connect these dots between the importance of home and also the role and the dignity of the person making a home.
Our number is 888-318-7884. If you want to talk with our guest, Noel Maring, about the theology of home, you are very welcome. Maybe you are keeping home somewhere yourself or wanting to, if you have questions about that and how that connects to our Christian vocation, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I have a sense in your work and in Carrie Gress's work that there's something that is missing in the way that the world, treats or talks about women these days. And that is that women have a different relationship to the beautiful than men do. I couldn't quantify the difference, but it's not the same relationship.
Yeah, no, I think that's really insightful. I mean, I think in some ways we've sort of lost what is special about womanhood and femininity in a particular way. You know, we kind of measure like the success or the ideal as being sort of a more masculine one, where women have to aspire to kind of be doers and achievers and all these things. And, you know, that can be beautiful and powerful and important. However, there are very feminine virtues that we talk about in the book, such as nurturing or tenderness. You know, tenderness sounds almost to our modern ear as being overly sentimental or sappy or something.
Right.
But it's actually really important, you know, to identify something that's tender in the medical world. You have to interact with the womb. wound in order to identify that it is a wound. And so there's something kind of beautiful, a metaphor there that we can think about relationally, that there is some way in which a very womanly tended way of kind of being so relational that we can be almost more intuitive in some ways about where someone might need healing, be it our children, our friends, our neighbor, our husbands, and speak into that and be, you know, a presence that can speak into that, you know, kind of wounded place in a tender way that actually can help with healing and is really vitally important, you know. And I think we discredit that type of virtue and it is a disservice to all of us if we discredit it.
It really is. And it's also so much a way of kind of by emphasizing other virtues, particularly the commercial virtues, then we make the person who's just really good at listening or making spaces that are beautiful to other people or being helpful, that somehow that's all secondary.
That's right. And I mean, there's so many things that are just these quiet but powerful ways in which, for example, a mother might, you know, communicate to her family. So, for example, even with an infant, you know, a mother looks at her infant with eyes of love and saying, "You are significant." It's just this utter joy if you see a mom with her newborn baby. And fathers do the same thing. It's not, you know, I'm not trying to draw a hard line there. But there is some very womanly way in which I think we can communicate this significance to the human person, that you are unconditionally known, loved, named, special, that is really a feminine kind of superpower.
Yeah. 888-318-7884. But that, okay, so take that feminine superpower. And you also have this industry growing up of like HGTV and all of this stuff that is designed to help you make your house beautiful and even think about how to make your house beautiful or the yard beautiful or the, you know, your space beautiful. And it seems like, why are people who, I mean, in many ways, many women have been kind of drawn into the commercial world full time, but they still want to come home to this beautiful home. They still will watch the TV shows about, you know, how to beautify this place.
Yeah, no, I think one of the hooks of those TV shows tends to be, how can I find a diamond in the rough and transform it into something really, really wonderful,
right,
really
yeah.
beautiful. And I think that's even a very womanly desire. There's a creativity there that I can take something in and through, you know, my own efforts and blood and sweat and tears, you know, I can make it into something really, really beautiful. But I also think there's an element of just the home becoming beautiful is in some ways just because we want a beautiful life. You know, we want a place that we can foster and welcome people in, and it can be a backdrop, you know, to the great theater of our lives, to paraphrase a Chesterton quote. But I think that we can veer on two different opposite ends of the spectrum as far as falling into an error, right? Where we can fall into an error of materialism, where we're focused on kind of impressing other people and luxury and how is this going to serve me. Or we can focus on sort of an austerity where we think, you know, I'm not going to pay attention to these things. You know, maybe I'm a Catholic and I'm going to pay attention to the spiritual world. But of course, you know, we're embodied beings. And so we have to find that balance where we're really seeking for beauty, not luxury that serves us, but a beauty that points us and our families and our friends to something higher, something more beautiful.
Again, 888-318-7884, our number. You probably know Noelle Mehring from her book, Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. It's a wonderful kind of series of insights into how this all got started, what it means for us now and where it's all going. But the other side of her work is this beautiful theology of homework that she and other women do. You have a website. I get your email every day.
Yeah, so we have a website, theologyofhome.com, and it's sort of become an online women's magazine. We curate media, everything from fun, you know, organizing, fashion, decorating, to, you know, spiritual meat, to analysis of, you know, maybe something going on in the culture. And then we deliver it to your inbox once a day. So it's an aggregate of media, and we kind of sift through to find what's most interesting in the day, and also, you know, not with all the junk that kind of so much of women's media is laced with. I think it fulfills that sort of desire to kind of sit down with a magazine, but not a magazine that's going to be constantly attacking all of our worldviews.
Yeah, right, right. And that's the case with many. I mean, when you check out at the grocery store, a lot of the women's magazines are really kind of degrading in a way, even the things that are being covered in there, in the same way that men's sports magazines are yeah. In many ways.
It almost feels like when I look at modern women's magazines, it almost feels like a hatred of womanhood, right? Where we have to either, like, we have to be mutilating ourselves in some way, like either just for this hyper, like, sexualized idea of womanhood or an androgynous kind of, you know, reactionary kind of hardcore feminism. Whereas there's like a real missing middle place there, a healthy place, whereas we can acknowledge that we are women, that, you know, there's something wonderful about that. And celebrate that and not try to contort it, you know, into, you know, one side or the other.
888-318-7884. We're talking the theology of home with Noelle Mehring. And what about the person who, though, you know, says, what you really want, Noelle, it's a 1950s view of womanhood. And we've moved on. And why are you trying to bring us back to the 1950s?
Yeah, well, we explicitly actually in Theology of Home 2 rebut that gently but also firmly. And I think that what we're trying to do is not rehashing of something old, but rather like the church, ever ancient, ever new, that what we're speaking to is something that is a universal, deeply human longing to have and make a beautiful home, have happy families, have a place that we can belong and be known and have the intimacy of that sort of relationship. And that is not a throwback where we're putting on a costume and pretending and playing make-believe of some old era. It actually can feel very modern, I think, and because it's relevant to the deepest longing of the human heart.
Indeed. But the human heart being either a male or a female heart, and this is the thing about, like, our society, is, like, men and women are obviously different. We're obviously different. But that is, I mean, I think I've just got kicked off Twitter just for saying that. I don't think I'm on Twitter anymore. I'll look when I get off the show. But that basic truth, I actually think, is used in many ways as a weapon against young women to drive them away from what their woman's heart desires to desire other things.
Yeah, I think it's been marketed as being a lesser desire, and I think we're trying to combat that. At the same time, you know, in the same way, I think that one of the things we talked about in the first Theology of Home book is the importance of men prioritizing home. You know, that even if my husband's working a full-time career, but I never have the sense that his career is more important than his work at home. That the career is for the sake of what's happening in our home life, and that our home life is our common project, and that we're partners in that mission. But once I think men, you know, oftentimes if men start diminishing the importance and the value of the home, then it becomes diminished in the female eyes as well. And then that kind of harms everyone.
Right, right. And that harkens back to an earlier view of home that goes much earlier than say, the 1950s, which actually I always think when someone says, well, that 1950s vision of home was ugly. Yeah, in a lot of ways it actually was. I mean, that was the beginning of the television era and isolation and loneliness for people. But an earlier view, more agrarian view of the home as a place where we work together, where we live together, where we build something together, all of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like that iconic painting of the couple in the field praying the Angelus, you know, where cease their work. And then, you know, that it's a really beautiful idea. But yeah, we lost that a lot. In a lot of ways. And even with the 1950s thing, I think that it's, you know, there's something kind of awful about, you know, and we don't want to catastrophize what was happening in the 1950s, but at the same time, I think maybe the idea is that there was a shell of a life that was good, but it was beginning to be divested. You know, certainly the 60s.
Oh, how
the
interesting.
Meaning that is supposed to support that form.
Right. So then the outer thing becomes oppressive because you got to maintain the outer
And there's
appearance.
A hollowness inside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Really smart, Noelle. No wonder you're writing all these books. 888-318-7884 is the number. I'm going to ask you one more question when we come back, and then I'll let callers talk to you. But I want to let you know what the question is going to be. Something you mentioned to us earlier when you were meeting with a lot of us here at Catholic Answers. It just went right out of my head. That's embarrassing. But it's going to be a really good question. It's going to be a really good question. We'll do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, I'm Kristalina Everett, and I am so blessed to have a great new show on EWTN Radio. It's called Women Made New, where women help women get closer to God. Through honest conversations with our guests about the challenges we face in our lives, we're reminded that no matter what mistakes we've made, it's never too late to start over when we receive healing from the God who makes all things new. That's Women Made New every Saturday at 12 noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I got to just stick to drinking water at lunch. I don't know what's happening to me. Like, I'm in the middle of a sentence and I forgot how I was going to finish the sentence. 888-318-7884. Noel Maring is here. The two books I got right here in front of me, Theology of Home and Theology, and that the subtitle on that one is Finding the Eternal in the Everyday, and The Theology of Home 2, The Spiritual Art of Homemaking. I assume there will be a Theology of Home 3 at some point. This is going to go on.
Coming out this spring, actually.
Oh, really?
Finished it, yeah.
All right, very good. So what does it mean, finding the eternal in the everyday?
Well, I think that's the idea, speaking to the idea that it is actually in the small, hidden, very ordinary moments of our days that we are, you know, finding Christ. And if we're not finding him there, then it's going to be really hard to find him in the big dramatic moments. And I think we've really done ourselves a disservice in prioritizing sort of the big, public, grand moments of life, the drama, and we've lost sort of the ordinariness, the everydayness that is really the opportunity for us to grow in closeness to Christ. And rediscovering that, which seems so particularly, you know, the purview of the work of home, because it is hidden. There's a hiddenness to it. We're not getting thanked, you know, by a boss. We don't get a paycheck.
Right.
But there's a real beauty there that we can really kind of sanctify those ordinary moments.
And this beauty is not dependent on that, you know, I can spend a lot of money and live like the Real Housewives of... I don't know which one is your favorite. I don't know. They got them all over the place, but wherever. But you know what I'm saying? Like that's not what you're saying. Is you know, it's this kind of crystal to have, or it's that kind of backsplash. That's not what you're getting at.
No, not at all. In fact, I think about this experience I had recently where I went to an old friend's house, and they are, you know, family of I think 12, very humble home. But I went around taking pictures of every nook and cranny because she had put so much intention and love and order into this very humble home that it was incredibly beautiful. And so it's really not about, you know, financial means at all. I think it's something that it's available to anyone. And sometimes people who erect, you know, kind of a perfect palace find that it doesn't feel homey at all.
No,
you know, they don't want
right.
people to come into it. They're afraid it's going to get messed up. And it actually is, it becomes less beautiful because of sort of the emphasis on the material.
A bunch of calls now. And I said I would go to the callers after one question. I asked two. Sorry about that. Facebook will yell at me now. I just got kicked off Twitter, and now Facebook's going to be yelling at me. 888-318-7884, the number. Why don't we start with, if you're ready, ready to go to phones? All right, we'll go to Mike in South Carolina, listening on 7:30 a.m. Mike, we're very grateful for your call. Go ahead with your question for Noel Maring.
Hi, good evening. I'm in the Navy, and I'm intrigued by this concept of beautifying the home and building a beautiful home. I'm single right now, and before I get into dating, before I get into marriage or anything like that, what are some things I can be doing to be building virtue for preparing for the future?
What a beautiful question, Mike.
It's a beautiful question, and that even that you're thinking in those terms is such a beautiful thing. You know, I think that it's always good to think about starting small. You know, how am I ordering my prayer life? Am I trying to work on a specific habit and build that habit? You know, because as much as we can, you know, rely on our spiritual life as being something that's like consoling and you know, meaningful, and we really, it really takes devotion, consistency, perseverance. And so I think insofar as you're establishing, working on little habits, not where you're setting yourself up to fail and you're trying to do too much at once, but just trying to adopt habits of prayer and building those up and really trying to develop a relationship with our Lord, and with a goal being that we can always be in conversation with him throughout our day.
What do you think, Mike?
Excellent. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, God bless you. I'm so glad we have men like you in the Navy.
Thank you. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Well,
my guys love you guys.
All right. Thank you. I just remembered. Remember before I went to the break, I said there was a really profound thing you said? It just came back to me when Mike was talking. That there's a something about keeping home is evangelizing, that there's an evangelizing quality to a Catholic home. And I don't want to leave out Orthodox or Protestant brothers and sisters, or I imagine, you know, others, but to keep a home that has the sense of the faith in it is an evangelizing act.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think insofar as, you know, we are oriented towards looking at what we have as a gift, right? And so if something's a gift, then we have a duty to share it. And I think that the magic and the beauty of a Catholic home is that home has been attacked, and there's so many people walking through the world with deep wounds because they were deprived of something that they ought to have had. And welcoming somebody into your home and into the intimacy of home life and family life with, you know, we might not see it as being beautiful, you know, with the messes and the crumbs and the children bickering and all these things. But I think it can feel really other, you know, to a lot of people. And I had that experience when I was a new mom, just being welcomed into a more seasoned mom's home and seeing her interact with her children patiently, whereas my instincts were all towards selfishness and impatience, and seeing that it embodied, you know, that life of virtue embodied in that environment. It's, in some ways, you know, it can be a way to evangelize in the sense that we can more easily get people over to our homes than we can to Mass, and oftentimes. And so I think we can think of our homes that way, that they're not places to be insular, but rather to be open and to be fruitful.
Right. And you and your kids are a wonderful kind of aspect of that at a certain point, because they bring the other kids over to the house and you've got that crucifix on the wall, but you also are all sitting down to dinner together and you love one another, even though you're arguing or doing whatever normal people do. And I've had quite a few kids say to my kids, I'd never been in a house like that. And it's not, certainly not because we're people of impeccable virtue. It's because homes have really been greatly diminished in many places. They're just, lots of kids are raised in an environment where they don't see a loving community at home.
Yeah. I wrote in the first book about an old friend of mine who, when she was going through turmoil in her family and her through divorce with her parents, and they were kind of bouncing around from sleeping on people's couches with her mom and her brother and dog, and this big family took them in and just took them in for a whole year. And she, and somewhere in the magic of, you know, the little plays after dinner and the warm baths and, you know, all of these things and the community life, she was, you know, stitched back together in ways that carried her throughout the rest of her life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get the feeling there's a lot of those things we're going to learn from the Lord himself at the final judgment, because those are the ones that I'm sure he wants to point to and go, that's what I was talking about. Stuff like that. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. We got a call from a caller who didn't want to stay on the line, but I want to, and I can maybe guess why from the question. What if you're just not good at it? What if you're not good at keeping house?
Yeah, I mean, I am sympathetic to that. And I think that we have to acknowledge that everyone has different strengths. I mean, I'm not great in the kitchen. I'm not a good baker. And so in some ways, I think you just lean into things you are good at. Like, even if you're not good at decorating or something, maybe you're good at organizing, or maybe, you know, you're good at least cleaning or something. And so the thing that you're good at, you know, focus on that and, you know, feel encouraged by that. And then, maybe, you know, maybe try in some ways to get better at other things. But I mean, that's what I do in the kitchen, and I still haven't mastered it by any means. But, you know, I think that the point is to not be discouraged, right? Like, discouragement is our enemy. And so everyone has within their ability to kind of shoot for cleanliness and order. And amongst those two things is a great whole host of goodness that you can bring to your home. An ordered, cleanly home is a beautiful thing.
Right. And do you fit hospitality in there too? I mean, a hospitable spirit?
Yeah, no. So we have a whole chapter in the first book about hospitality, which I actually loved leaning into that. It was so interesting to think about. I mean, even the etymology of the word hospice, and, you know, that I think the word kind of implies sort of an enemy at your door, but that there's a way in which, you know, even with the thinking about a connection to hospitals, that there's like a healing there. But there's a great story about this this nun who St. Jose Maria Escrivá would talk about, where she was injured and she was hurt. And she was being taken care of by a group of nuns. I'm probably not getting the story quite right. And she said she missed her home. She missed her mom. And she said, you know, they treat me with charity here, but at home I was treated with affection. And I love that, because it's not, you know, a strict definition of charity. Obviously, charity is, you know, far more beautiful. But that idea of affection, that's something to foster, that I'm not just taking care of you or, you know, being with you or, you know, listening to you out of duty, but I delight in you. you know, that kind of thing. And I think that that is, you know, really the magic that we can foster in our homes.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It seems to me that to make this home that you're talking about in Theology of Home and in Theology of Home 2, the sequel, and then the trilogy to be completed soon with Theology of Home 3, it actually takes a great deal of virtue. That this is, I mean, this is not for the faint of heart to attempt to make a home that's beautiful and hospitable and loving and, you know, all those things that are evangelical in their impact on other people. It's not easy to do.
No, it's not. And that's the interesting thing is that we admire like the hard sweat and work that goes into, you know, running a marathon or developing a high-end career or, you know, or getting a certain skill or developing a garden. But we don't think about the work that we're putting into developing a beautiful, happy family as being that sort of effort, that sort of admirable effort. It feels almost like too much of a burden or kind of Pollyanna-ish, like, you know, oh, okay, just great, a happy family. Well, it's hard. It's certainly hard. And that's the beauty and the terribleness of family life is that you're confronted with your impatience and your selfishness and all these things. You see your imperfections pretty clearly, I think, at the intimacy of family life. But you also get to struggle against them. You get to contend with them. And that sort of opportunity is, you know, that struggle is where it's at, you know, for all of us as human beings. We want to be able to see that, and we want to be able to fight against it and grow.
Again, our number 888-318-7884. I realize I've been monopolizing a bit, but I will get to phones when we come back. Noel Mehring is our guest. We're talking about the Theology of Home. You can find it on the internet. Just search Theology of Home. You'll find their website. You can get their daily emails, which are themselves beautiful. You guys take that seriously. You make even a beautiful email arrives in your email box each morning. More of your calls for Noel Mehring right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Tomorrow on More to Life, Family Matters.
Household tension? Struggling to connect? We'll help you create a more joyful family life.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. I really like this idea of evangelizing by making a beautiful home and inviting home a hospitable home, because I think so many of us can think John Paul, you know, goes around the world for all those years telling us we're all supposed to be evangelizing. But how am I supposed to be evangelizing? Could you give me a little help on that? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean to go out even into the highways and byways, although some of us better do that. But others, we may be called to make a beautiful home, to make a beautiful space for other people. And I mean that space in terms of the physical space and the spiritual and social space that people come into. That's what Noelle Maring and Carrie Gress and their photographer, Kim.
Kim Bale. Wonderful.
Did she come here when you two were here before?
No.
I didn't think I had met her. Theology of Home are the names of their book series, the third one about to come out this spring. Theology of Home, also the website and a wonderful service of getting emails each day, so you can check that out. I'll go back to the phones now. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. Let's go to Caleb in Illinois, listening on 92.5 FM. Caleb, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Noelle Maring.
Hi.
Hi, Caleb.
My wife and I are recently homeowners for the first time. It's our first home.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. but neither one of us feels really at home in it yet. And we're trying to sort of both, you know, become more connected spiritually and make our home more of a home, if you will. So what are some small practical steps that we can do to achieve that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Caleb, and I think a common one. And in some ways, I think, you know, building a home is just a time thing, you know, that the seasoning and the patina of the memories that are formed in a home. But I think just thinking about, you know, where you want to start, you know, if you want to have kind of the heart of the home, maybe there's a place that you want to establish where you and your wife say your prayers and, you know, you put a candle there and a crucifix and try to make this one little corner really beautiful. You know, and just thinking small but simple, and eventually, you know, those memories will form as the house forms, and you'll kind of form each other together through your life. But, you know, but a home oftentimes will feel foreign until it's lived in, right? You know, it's supposed to feel foreign until it's really lived in. But I think just having that intentional, that desire to make it, turn it into a home will help and go a long way.
What do you think, Caleb?
I mean, that's wonderful advice. Thank you.
Can I give you a little piece of advice, too? Because I don't think that Noelle is going to give it. Go to a website called theologyofhome.com and start reading what they do there.
We also have a shop there. Speaking of candles, you can get one of our candles. We have a ton of home goods and lots of home inspiration. So, yeah, thanks, Si. Thanks for mentioning that.
God bless you as you make that home together, Caleb.
Excellent. You as well. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Columbia, Missouri now. Tricia in Columbia, Missouri, listening on 94.7 FM. You are up next with our guest, Noelle Maring. Go ahead, Tricia, with your question.
Hi. I teach college and work with a lot of young women and wondering what to say to them when they're so focused on their careers as opposed to creating a home.
Oh, that's an excellent question, and I love that you're trying to figure that out. You know, I think that that's a real problem, where in so many ways, women are given just one message about what they should be doing with their lives. And it's oftentimes, if you talk to these young women, my experience is that, you know, if you say, what do you want out of your life? You know, eventually, what they think, and they're being candid, they'll say, you know, I really want to have a husband. I really, you know, I want children. I want to have a happy family. And I think that giving them permission to prioritize that, you know, is something that's probably a message they're not going to hear otherwise. And it's a really important one, because I hear of women all the time who are, you know, they get to a point where, you know, they feel like they've waited too long and they're wondering if they missed the boat and if they should have prioritized that. And it's worth prioritizing. You know, it's the very human stuff of life is to make a family. And if you're called and your desires for that, then it's important to pursue and to make room for.
Okay. I like that. Give them permission.
Give them permission. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that call.
All right. Thanks.
All right. 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking with Noelle Maring about the theology of home. And I guess underlying all of this is an awareness that women have a great God-sharing power. Is not necessarily being tapped into because we're being untruthful about what women are, what women want, how women operate.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the theology of home and the Wake Not Woke book in some ways are related in this way. You know, we're in Wake Not Woke, it's kind of analyzing, you know, why was the family attacked? Why was there such a branding of the oppression of family life and home life? And in theology of home, we're really trying to say, well, actually, you know, there here's some media, you know, here's some images and some embodied and substantive, you know, books showing that the actual beauty of this life and, you know, showing another way of being in the world. But they are related in that way, that there's been an effort to portray it in a very negative light, and we're trying to show there's another way to look at this.
888-318-7884, the number. I think I'm going to go to, I got to tell Thomas, line four, anonymous in Spirit Catholic Radio. Thomas, you got to give me a line. That's all right. Anonymous, you there with us?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, you're on the air. Did you have a question for Noelle? No, that's okay.
Yes, I did. I'm wondering what if you can like really create a home if you don't have a family, if you're by yourself, and what advice you'd have for someone who finds himself in that situation.
Yeah, that's a great question. So in Theology of Home 2, we made an effort. We profiled women at all different ages and stages and situations. So we have a young mother with her very first baby, a woman with, you know, 9 babies. Then we have a grandmother. And then we have a single woman. We have a professional woman. And what we're trying to say is that there's no one way that this life is supposed to look like. There's a common thread throughout, which is a call towards, you know, a desire to be fruitful, not necessarily biologically, but even just spiritually. And I think that that's an important message for single women to hear, too, is that we want to make good out of our lives. And I think as a single woman, there's a whole host of ways in which we can be building a home that's welcoming to our friends and can be, you know, receptive of other people, you know, in the ways that are evangelical, but also just, you know, very humanly nurturing and healing. As we're developing ourselves professionally, you know, at the same time in the world or whatever you're called to. But I think that even if we are, I don't think we should relegate it just to the woman in the throes of motherhood and family life. There are other, you know, we find ourselves in varying stages of life, and those are important and should not be diminished in any way.
What do you think?
I think that's a good answer. Thank you.
Oh, all right. Good. Well, you are you're satisfying the callers today, Noelle. You really are. 888-318-7884, the number. Theology of Home is our topic. We take that name from the website and from the book series by our guests, Noelle Mehring and Carrie Gress. And you are welcome to call and ask your questions about doing the theology of home. That is making the world beautiful, I guess, one room at a time, one corner at a time, and one guest at a time.
Yeah.
All that?
Yeah. I think that we're all, you know, we're always in some ways, and it gets back to that last caller, you know, we're responding to what we've been given, you know, and whatever material we've been given, you know, either the stuff of life or the stage we're in life, that oftentimes we're just responding. What does God want for me in this moment? You know, without wishing it away or wishing that we're in some other situation, but responding to the situation of our life.
888-318-7884. I'm supposed to tell you about the podcasts before we take a break. And right now, what is the best Bible translation? That's what Trent's covering over at the Council of Trent, TrentHornPodcast.com. You know Trent does great stuff. You should check it out, TrentHornPodcast.com. And we're continuing our efforts. All this year, we've been digging into pro-life arguments and rebutting kind of anti-life arguments because it's a big year for the pro-life movement, potentially a seminal year given what the Supreme Court might do. So this one, we decided, let's talk about the simplest pro-life argument. If you had to break it down into its simplest form, what would it be? And it's three sentences. And Joe Heschmeyer gave them to us. You can find that at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you for all the work that you've done. I work at it and then it's like, you know, I stop and then I start and then I stop. You've done so much and thank you for everything you do. And thank you, EWTN. I mean, I had a line that I could spread at work today from what I heard this morning on EWTN, that it took a woman to put Jesus on the earth.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? set up a sign on the sidewalk, and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Next hour, Jimmy's going to be here. We'll do an hour of open forum with Jimmy Akin. Right after this hour, we have the great good fortune of having Noelle Maring with us. She's the author of, as I've mentioned, the book Awake, Not Woke, which is a very, very popular book, very well-received book, dealing with, giving, I should say, a Christian response to the cult of progressive ideology. An ideology it's got decades and decades and decades behind it. It didn't just get born today, did it?
No, I think that's one of the most interesting things in researching the book is how planned out and how, you know, seeded throughout the culture it has been in a very premeditated way. And I think we feel like it's a new movement, like it just sprung up out of nowhere, but it actually has been evolving and growing and, dividing for many decades.
And it gives the other side of the story that you tell in Theology of the Home, that really maybe a good part of why we need Theology of the Home now and to think these things through and overcome some maybe internal obstacles we have to... Yeah, I don't know, settling down and believing in family and home and those kinds of things, is that those things have actually quite literally been under attack for a long time now.
They have been. And it's interesting, too, even when you think about defending them, you almost sound sentimental or sappish, like the family, you know. But
yeah,
but
right.
Really, in the literature, if you read every revolutionary from Marx to Marcuse said that you have to depose the father and, you know, make the wife, you know, make men licentious so the wife becomes calloused and then the children become rebellious because the moral authority in their lives has been dismantled. But they all identify the greatest obstacles to revolution as being the faith and the family. And I think it's because, you know, you get this sense of belonging in a family that is really hard to replicate. And you'll walk through the world the rest of your life trying to find it. And that disposes you to being more vulnerable to sort of, you know, a facsimile of a family, like a gang type, you know, and yeah. Not even specifically a gang, but something that's tribalism, you know, even if it's a political tribe, you know, where you're sort of reduced and absorbed into kind of an ideology. And I think the family's a real buffer from that.
Yeah, it is. If you can maintain it, because the parent's job now is, it also involves some defense that you maybe didn't have to do, I don't know, 300 years ago. That is defending the child through decades of a certain kind of education in the media and other sources that it really gives them such a. I mean, I just think of the instant dismissal that your work will get in certain. Places, you know, that yeah. The instant dismissal, oh, that old view of women, you know?
Right. And the irony is that, you know, it really is the best way to defend the vulnerable. You know, if you, like, I think that there's a lot of talk about wanting to be on the side of the people who are vulnerable. Well, the people who are most made vulnerable in the dismantling of the family are women and children. You know, that children are supposed to be protected and that the family gives that kind of context for them to be, you know, nurtured and protected from things they shouldn't be exposed to yet. And you leave those kind of vulnerable people so much more worse off insofar as you dismantle the family life. And so if we're concerned about, you know, the vulnerable and the people, you know, that we really, the family's the best buffer against a whole host of social pathologies. It's the best anti-poverty initiative you can erect is the affirmed and resolute defense of family life.
Right, exactly. And you do get the feeling like we're having these great national and even international debates about forms of government and forms of economies and what are we going to do? And we're all upset and worried that this side's going to win or that side's going to win. And the truth is, if we really had a commitment to family and family was well done, you know, the economy will work itself out. The government will work itself out. If you really had, because family is that determinative of what a culture is.
Yeah. As that cellular level breaks down, then you need more and more, you know, higher level, you know, that are far more remote to the human person. It becomes a depersonalized, you know, way of caring for the person. Necessary in certain ways, you know. But I think it's hard to talk about because I think it sometimes it just makes people feel bad. Like if you didn't have it or... perhaps your family's broken. Yeah. You know, I think that that's a lot of the resistance to talking about it. And I'm very sympathetic to that because I certainly, not my goal to make someone feel bad that their family life didn't measure up to an ideal that, you know, that maybe I'm espousing. But I think that we can't let, you know, what has wounded us make us think that the wound wasn't wounding, you know, that we don't want to give a solution that is actually denying the actual cause of what wounded us.
Very well said. Yeah. And you sometimes words have almost lost their meaning, like community and hospitality and that, because the child has been raised by parents even now who didn't experience those things. You know, it's not just the child's experience. It's generations of lack of experience of what extended family is like, for example, or what, like, fathers in the home is like.
Yeah, and you almost can't see it anymore. And if you think about it, you know, even the way that we think about fathers in the home or the importance of fatherhood, it almost sounds like you want to harken back to this, like, domineering, you know, oppressive, you know, old-fashioned situation when, you know, a true masculinity and true fatherhood is about, you know, orienting people towards freedom. You know, that it's setting boundaries and discipline and all these things for the sake of someone becoming free and their children becoming, you know, responsible and independent. Whereas, you know, an authoritarian is trying to control and keep you dependent. But we don't see those distinctions anymore because we've been so, you know, kind of brainwashed into thinking of all these negative stereotypes that I think we don't have to be, and we need to rediscover the other way.
Right. Some kind of alchemy has happened where things that are naturally beautiful to us have taken on an ugliness, or, you know, if you talk about motherhood or fatherhood, that's offensive in many places to talk about motherhood or fatherhood. These are the two, I mean, at least two of the most beautiful roles a human being can play.
Yeah, and I think insofar as we obscure our understanding of them, we obscure a lot of spiritual realities, right? You know, the bride of Christ, there's so many, the wedding feast, you know, there's so many marital kind of metaphors in Scripture. And I think it's because, you know, God truly is a father. He's not a father because he's like a human father. Human fathers are more perfectly human fathers insofar as they are grown in resemblance to him. But that's a real reality, and it's a beautiful one. And so far as we lose that, we lose a whole richness of the faith.
Noelle Maring's our guest. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. I don't know why we can't keep people on the phone to ask their question, but they're leaving their questions, so I'll just read them to you. And so this question comes from Nebraska, a listener listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Does the book, and I assume this means the Theology of Home book and then the sequel, the Theology of Home 2, does the book suggest that you need to be a parent instead of having a career? I want to get it for my kids, but I don't want them to think I'm telling them that.
Yeah, no, as I said to the other caller, we certainly profile women in all different ages and stages, professional women as well as stay-at-home moms. So we're not trying to say that it has to look in one particular way, but rather trying to have a broader understanding of what it is to be making a home and how that is important to anyone at any stage in life, whether you're a career woman, whether you're a widow, whether you're, you know, just starting out adult, or whether you've got a gaggle full of children. I think that importance of home is important because it's a foretaste for heaven. You know, there's something about home that is both nostalgic. You're looking back on your childhood and what was formed there, or what was omitted. And you're also longing for something. There's a belonging, but also a longing, you know, and that's similar to, you know, our longing for heaven. It's something that's pointing us to a place where we can just be. You know, we're not going to be valued for what we can do or what we can contribute, but rather we can just be, you know, with our Lord. And I think home gives us a really beautiful taste for that. And that's not limited to the woman who's not working, certainly.
It's funny, when I hear you talking about it, I realize that we say something here at Catholic Answers when someone says, I came into the Catholic Church last month or last week or last year, we say, welcome home. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, I wonder about what does that mean anymore, welcome home? Because really, here's another thing for you. My old Irish grandfather used to say all the time, and I almost was like part of the furniture. This world is not our home. You know, something bad would happen. This world is not our home. Meaning we do have a home where we're going. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to have any idea that that's a good thing if if home here isn't?
Right. That's such an excellent point. You know, my spiritual director always says we're meant to be pilgrims, not wanderers. You know, we have a mission and a purpose, but we have a destination. And home gives us a foretaste for that. But along the lines of what you said initially, I remember I knew I was going to marry my husband when we were boyfriend, girlfriend at the time. And when I realized that he had become my home and that my home had shifted from a place to a person. And I think that speaks of something too, just that, you know, home is oriented towards, you know, the communal life that you can experience, that home is a backdrop for. And that's that sense of, you know, truly belonging, not just to a place, but also to a person. And ultimately, first and foremost, it should be to God. And that's why the single person is not, prohibited from this sort of communion right. And belonging, is that ultimately is our true home, as you said, too, you know, in the church and heaven.
888-318-7884, the number. I want to give you the name of the Theology of Home books. Again, Theology of Home, the first one was called Finding the Eternal in the Everyday. And then Theology of Home 2, The Spiritual Art of Homemaking. Why is it a spiritual art? What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think we were trying to tap into just that there is something with both home and the art of homemaking that it really is, you know, it's not limited to just something that's material, but it's also not supposed to be divorced from it, where, you know, the stuff of life doesn't matter and, you know, it could just be anything. That actually, you know, we have a calling to kind of bring a spiritual reality into the material dimension. And that gives a dignity to the material, you know, that's why the church has always been the greatest patron of the arts, right? Because that beauty matters and beauty in the material also matters as a way to point us towards our Lord and towards the real meaning of beauty. But we are incarnate beings, you know, we have bodies and those bodies matter. And, you know, as Catholics, you know, that's a real central part of the faith, is that composite of body and spirit. But that is the work of homemaking, is that we are, you know, in the dishes and in sweeping up the crumbs and all that stuff of life, the bodies and the messes and the wine, and that somewhere amidst all that stuff, there are real spiritual things that are happening amongst all those small moments that are being built and remedied and rebuilt and will spread and grow throughout the ages.
Did you just throw wine in the middle of that list?
I did
list?
Throw wine.
You just threw wine in there.
I do that sometimes.
So talk to me about rituals then, because one of the ways the home becomes a place of spiritual growth for everybody in the home is the rituals that the home has.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought of that after with the question about how do we make a home when it doesn't feel like a home yet, is that ritual does help with that. You know, that here's where we do this. This is the chair where I pray, or this is where, we always at Easter, we fill our house with Easter lilies and the smells and the scents and the sight and, you know, that all these physical things. And which we were talking earlier, I think before the show, about, you know, just that importance of for children to grow up with all of those kind of, they're such sponges, you know, children are always touching things and, you know, smelling things and messing or reorganizing things. And it's because they're learning through all those sensory experiences. And so if we can orient all of those experiences towards something that is pointing to something sacramental, some deeper reality, I think that can form and shape them for the rest of their lives in attachment to that sacrament.
Yeah, like even family prayer, it could be a miserable experience, or it could be an experience that's even physically a comfortable and comforting experience, depending on what the smells are and where how we join together in that prayer and where we do it.
Yeah. And I think our attitude makes a big difference. You know, we can get caught up in everything being perfect, but I remember someone asked me when I had my fifth baby and she said, how do you do it? And I said, imperfectly. Because I think there's an attitude of just like, you know, I'm just going to go with it. And if I'm more disposed towards just finding, you know, the joy, no matter how imperfect and awful and how many tears there are, then that'll communicate something more than if I have everything in place and perfectly done, you know.
Noelle Maring, our guest, you can check out her work and even be the recipient of it each day and the beneficiary of it each day by going to TheologyOfHome.com, right?
Yes. So
TheologyOfHome.com. Did you guys copyright that now? Is Theology of Home copyright?
We trademarked it.
Oh, you trademarked
yeah.
it? Nice. You're no fools. I'm going to go to this call, but I don't know that I've got time to go. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we have time as Thomas screens the call. But I would like to ask you about the young women in particular who... they seem so conflicted to me. And I know a lot of young women because I have two daughters. And so I, you know, they're friends and whatnot. They just seem so like there's a kind of pressure on them that I don't see on young men, or at least it does not manifest on young men, to be career perfect and family perfect.
And physically perfect.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's right. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a real problem, and it's probably, you know, too complex to really get too thoroughly into it. But, I think that there's just this, that pressure is stemming from maybe a hollowing out of, you know, a sort of simpler goal, right? A sort of simpler, you know, just a ability to be at peace, that I can just focus on this. But rather now, I just said, you know, this pressure to do it all, I think it's trying to accommodate, you know, their instincts to have a family, but also, you know, this, you know, maybe their natural talents, and all women, you know, have talents that they want to, you want to apply and develop. And, you know, and that is a really difficult thing, because, you know, we're used to, we want a metric for how we're doing in life. You know, we want to have some sort of measure, and in homemaking, you don't really have that measure. You're sort of flying blind. Mm-hmm. You're not sure how you're doing. And I think that we used to have it more because the craft of homemaking was more tangible. Knitting socks, darning socks, you know, making right. beef broth.
Right, yeah. Noelle Mehring, thanks very, very, very much. I really appreciate it. I hope people will check out your work at theologyofhome.com. Get the Theology of Home books as well. You're doing fantastic work. Also, Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. Good luck with your talk tonight.
Thank you.
I know when you come work for Chris Check, every 5 minutes he's got you at someplace else giving a talk, but good luck with it. And thanks. I really, really appreciate this conversation.
Oh, it's fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, an important conversation. We'll be right back after this break with Jimmy Akin, Open Forum. You're welcome to call with any question at all. 888-318-7884.